Well, so there's Iran, but yesterday there was confusion about other possible talks. On CBS, Secretary of State John Kerry made the provocative comment that the only way to end the five-year war in Syria is to get President Bashar al-Assad to the negotiating table.
We're going to have to make it clear to him that there is a determination by everybody to seek that political outcome and change his calculation about negotiating. That's underway right now.
Later, the State Department rushed to say that Kerry never meant actual direct talks with Assad. But meanwhile, the conflict in Syria, which started as a peaceful protest in 2011, has destroyed cities. More than 220,000 people have been killed. More than 11 million Syrians have been driven from their homes, many of them spilling into neighboring Lebanon. The BBC's Jim Muir has a report card.
This was our room, says Sidra, and that was Daddy's room, and there's the sitting room. Sidra is 10. She can barely write her own name, but she drew me a picture of the house in a battered suburb of Damascus, which she and her family fled 3 years ago. I asked her if she'd like to go home. Of course, she said. Is there anything nicer than your own house? Sidra and her family now live in a one-room shack with a rusty tin roof in the Lebanese hills. She has a younger sister and brother. Until recently, she had a baby sister, Sara. But Sara died in the night, just 5 weeks old. That's when the family discovered one of the big problems facing refugees here. There's nowhere to bury their dead on hallowed ground. Lebanese cemeteries refuse them. Sidra's mother, Rusun, described how no graveyard would agree to bury little Sara. Finally, they paid hundreds of dollars to bury her illegally in an unmarked grave in a Beirut cemetery. Only then were they told they could never come back.
The hardest thing is to lose your daughter and not be able to visit her grave, to smell the earth. It's reached the point where our kids are dying and we can't even see their graves. They're dying in front of us and we can't do a thing.
And inside Syria, more than 7.5 million others have fled their homes or are living under siege, like here in eastern Ghouta near Damascus. Two UN Security Council resolutions have failed to bring relief here. Abu Mohammed is a teacher in the heavily besieged area.
We ask the United Nations to open up humanitarian corridors to provide the two most important and basic things for the children, food and education. Save our children from ignorance.
Relief agencies have been struggling to deliver aid in the most difficult and dangerous of conditions, like here in Homs last year. Although the UN is accused of failing Syria, Baroness Valerie Amos, its humanitarian chief, says a lot is being done on the ground.
Humanitarian workers murdered in the most appalling ways. And yet, day in, day out, you have international NGOs, national NGOs, working to bring urgently needed aid to people who desperately need it. And the situation has just got worse and worse over time in trying to reach those people.
But an even bigger problem is that all relief efforts are severely underfunded as the crisis deepens. More than 20 international organizations, including Oxfam and Save the Children, have now blamed the UN for failing to follow up on those two important Security Council resolutions to save civilians. They say it's a failure of political will. David Miliband is head of the International Rescue Committee.
Because at the moment, there are fewer people around the world diplomatically engaged on this. The funding is drying up. And really the prospect is that Syria and Iraq are being abandoned to their own fate, and that is just unacceptable. That's really contrary to the whole purpose of having a UN Security Council.
The chances of Sidra and her family going home are now dimmer than ever. The world has failed them. She and millions of others will grow up in exile, truly a lost generation.
The BBC's Jim Muir in Lebanon.